This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. In 2022, Wavelength emerged from the delirium of lockdown with a selection of new shows exploring so-called post-artificial intelligence word flows alongside sound artist Dan Wilson. I had emailed Dan a number of increasingly nonsensical messages over a few years, and these formed the core of what I ironically call my collected works. And there may be more to come. On the horizon is a short post-AI posthumous operetta in tribute to Hugh de la Cruz, inventor of perpetual motion, among other things, and his partner Sue, former London underground worker. This led to some digging through the Wavelength archives to pinpoint the origin of these word flows. Thanks to James Dunn, most of the Wavelengths from 2013 were recovered from deep within the Resonance FM computers, shows previously thought lost. These included the Wavelengths with Resonance FM's then station manager Chris Weaver, shows that featured guests doing things with cassette tape. Adam Bowman's show in particular was an interesting example of performative poetry on Wavelength in the delirious style. This current show is the would-be fourth Wavelength, albeit minus Chris Weaver, and takes me full circle back to Wavelength's recurring figure, Captain Maurice Seddon, Royal Signal's retired deceased, and his tape archives. Some of Captain Seddon's taped phone calls were released as the Seddon Tapes, Volume 1, on Paradigm Discs, as a vinyl LP. What follows are some pure, unedited examples of Seddon's tapes, with all the noise, hums and clicks of his ramshackle and unique one-way telephone talk system.
Sie hören die Sendung Wellenlänge. Vous écoutez la transmission Longueur d'onde. Udite la trasmissione lunghezza d'onde. You are hearing the transmission called Wavelength. Have you done anything tremendous today?
Buon Natale, Maurizio.
Buon Natale a te. Hello? Hello, John.
Who the f*** is that?
That's a charming greeting, isn't it?
Yes, isn't it? Happy bloody New Year, mate. If you come near me in the New Year, I'll tear the nose off your face. All right?
You're very ill again. I'm very sorry.
I'm very
look,
Ill,
tell
man.
Tell me
I'm
something.
Ill.
Look, tell me something quickly.
Tell you something. I'm telling you to f*** off.
How is Anna?
I couldn't care less.
I've had no answer for 2 days from her number.
You won't have any answer, Morris, anymore.
What?
You won't have any answer anymore from anybody.
And why not?
Because you are who you are.
That's
New Year.
You're talking a lot of rubbish.
Yes,
now,
I
tell
am.
Me, is Anna in... Is
are
she
you
well?
Recording me?
What?
Are you recording me?
No, I am not.
Well,
now,
you
tell
me... should be.
How is Anna?
And if you're not, you should be.
How is Anna?
She's absolutely fine. I left her last night. Or early this morning, and she was absolutely fine then.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Well, I'm sorry you're in such a bad state.
I'm sorry too, Morris.
I hope the pain will go as soon as possible.
The pain will never go.
Well, I'm very sorry.
Yes.
Anyway, all
you're
the very...
You're not very sorry. You're just a wanker.
Well...
You're not very sorry.
If you were anybody...
When I was fixing your hot water and putting your bloody cold water right under the ground, you know? You didn't even know it then. And you will never, ever know it. And
John,
it's your fault, Murray.
John, if you were less ill than...
Happy New Year.
If you were less ill than you are, you
if
would get a very different answer.
If I were less ill than you are, I'd be another man, wouldn't I?
Yes.
And so would you.
Well, anyway,
how's
it's all...
How's your sword?
It's all very...
How's your sword?
Oh, it is stolen, as I think I probably told you, didn't I?
I think I probably was on the roof.
What?
It was stolen by a Dutch TV company.
Dutch.
One of their young boys. Was it?
Now, wait a minute. Is
oh,
this...
Wait a minute.
Is this some...
Are you recording me?
No, I'm not
recording you.
No, I'm not recording
you. Yes, for prosperity, I'm recording you.
Now, look. Okay, you go ahead and record. Now,
no,
tell me.
Illegal,
tell
you.
Me... Tell me
it's
more about...
To record.
Tell me more about this Dutch TV boy and the sword. What are you saying there? That he's...
What I'm saying is, when I was on your roof, I saw all kinds of people coming, including the RSPCA, to tell you about your dogs.
Well, I'm sure
you've
probably...
I'm telling you.
I'm sure you saw...
I'm telling you that when I was there, one had a baby.
One had a what?
A baby dog.
A Benedict...
Oh, and your papa dog.
I'm not understanding
yes,
what...
Your papa dog.
A bunny...
And you said, oh, they're just dogs, my dear. It doesn't matter.
What is
they're
a...
They're all eating the dog that's been born dead. And the placenta,
look,
too.
Look, can we concentrate on one thing at the moment? You spoke
no,
just
you
now
can't
about...
concentrate on anything.
We
you,
spoke...
Mind.
You spoke about
I'm
my
sorry.
Sword. Now, do you know who stole my sword? Do you know who stole my sword? What?
Do you know what the square root of 54 is?
Do you know who stole my sword?
I've no idea. All I know is...
Well, you said something just now about a Dutch television boy who stole the sword.
I promise you it wasn't me.
Well, have you any idea who it was?
No idea at all, except you had a Dutch TV company there at the time and a young boy stayed the night.
And what...
I remember that.
Dutch TV boy stayed the night.
I remember a lady in a fox stole that came to your gate and pressed your funny bell.
Sorry? I'm not understanding this. You said Dutch...
I remember a lady in a fox stole...
Yes.
...that rang your bell.
Oh, well, that I don't know about.
You do know, my dear. You went down and gave her a big pack of tapes, you know.
I gave her what?
All your nonsense.
What did I give her?
You gave her a big videotape. And a whole load of your whole recorded nonsense.
Well, I may have known who she was at the time, but at this point in time, I've no idea.
Didn't know who she
but
was,
now,
and you obviously didn't know who the RSPCA man was either.
Now, who was this
who
Dutch?
Told you about your dog?
What is this thing about this Dutch TV boy who stayed the night? I have no
you'll
recollection of any
else,
such event.
Dear.
What?
You'll have to ask the Dutch TV company.
I have no recollection of it. The Dutch TV, I think, may have come here.
Well, I do remember you saying your sword was stolen.
Yes, you do. But you...
I do remember coming down and fixing your mains water.
Yes, and I'm very grateful. Well. I'm very grateful
I
to you for doing...
I remember putting a hot water tank in your cupboard.
I remember...
In the middle of the bathroom.
I remember you doing that, and I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for
you.
It.
Know.
I'm very grateful,
yes,
and it functions... It functions well to this day. Do you know that? He's as mad as a hatter, poor thing. Quite mad. Well, now that was... Let me see what is the time. Yes, 12:53. On Boxing Day. Is it Boxing Day? Yes, it is. The 26th of December, 03. I wonder why he's so crazy today. There's some... must be some reason for it. He's completely out of his mind. Poor thing. Well, the main thing is that he thinks that Anna is well. I hope he's right. For such a long time, and I've inquired into it long ago, when it was much easier to get information. Today, the police are very, very secretive, and they don't want to tell one anything, and it's all tied up with the Data Protection Act and all this nonsense, and they don't want to tell one what's what. In those times, things were rather looser and rather easier.
What you have just said.
I see.
In order to maintain goodwill, I shall let you have this thing for what you can afford to pay me, this repair. But I make a condition there. Whereas normally I like to say to clients, I'm very glad to have done this work for you, and please come to me in future when you have problems. All I can say to you is this. In this case, if you are only willing to pay me a quarter of what the work is worth, right, you shall have it. So that I can wash my hands of the matter and be clear of it. But I shall then not be willing, I shall ask you not to come to me for repairs in the future. Whereas if you pay me a more fair and reasonable price, then I shall be delighted to do further work for you in the future. I would suggest to you that if you will pay me 200, which is half what I'm asking, then we can part on perfectly harmonious terms, and if you have more problems in the future with old machinery, I'll be very glad to look after you. But if you insist on 100, okay, you'll have it your way, but then please don't come to me again.
You see, it's so unfortunate. Anyway, that is what I'm going to pay. When are you bringing the case, please?
Now, that depends when I can next come into London. I'll have to telephone you and let you know. It'll be sometime in the next few days. Shall I bring it to your house or to the petrol station?
You bring it to my house, please.
Righto, okay. And you will pay me £100 when I bring it?
Yes.
Right, well then, that's accepted. But then please, in future, when you want other repairs, don't come to me, because you are paying me an unjustly insufficient price for what I have done. I want you to be quite clear on that point. And I cannot afford to allow myself to be starved of the money that I need to live on, because people will not pay me what is just.
Yeah, but do you think it was right and just for you to have dropped that machine at all?
To have done what?
To have dropped my machine.
My dear chap, I am extremely sorry that it was dropped, but it is an accident. Do you imagine that I deliberately dropped it? Of course I didn't. Occasionally these things do happen, but it hasn't affected the thing works perfectly well. I don't know really why you're so worried. I suppose it's because of the appearance. I am extremely sorry, that's all I can say. I quite agree it shouldn't happen, but unfortunately it does sometimes.
Well, I would appreciate if you, today's a Tuesday, if you find a very reasonable time before Saturday.
Before Saturday?
Yes. Yeah.
In other words, you'd like it as soon as possible?
Yes.
Well, hold on. Now, let's see what we can do along that basis. Just a second. Let me look at my diary. Today is the 10th and is a Tuesday. Well, I may, it all depends. You see, if I can combine this with doing something else in London, I may even be able to bring this to you this evening. But I would first of all have to find out whether I can combine it with something else. Will you be in this evening?
I'm going out by 8 o'clock.
By 8 o'clock?
Mm.
I cannot be with you by 8 o'clock because it's 7:30 now, or nearly.
Make it, it should be before 8 o'clock.
No, it's quite impossible. It takes me, I couldn't get to you at the earliest before about 9:30.
Yeah, I'm not saying today, that's what I'm saying, but...
Right, but supposing it were to be today, what time are you coming in again tonight?
It's going to be late, you know I work in the night.
Oh, I see. Well, look, I've got another suggestion. Why don't you take with you the machine you've now got to the petrol station?
No, it's not that place, I don't work that place again.
I see. Where do you work now?
It's not this area at all. I mean, it can't be of any use to you.
But what part of London is it?
I said it can't be of any use to you, so you just have to bring it to my house.
Right. Well, then I can't immediately answer it. Maybe it'll be tomorrow night, and if not, possibly the night after. But I'll bring it as soon as I can, but it does depend on various telephone calls I have to make. But please, I do ask you this, I want you to consider this carefully. If you're only going to pay me £100, which is totally insufficient, I shall accept it in order to wash my hands of the transaction and be rid of it. But only for that reason. I do consider it an unjust taking advantage. I do consider it wrong. I do consider it quite inadequate. So under those circumstances, any time you have other trouble with your equipment, I'm very sorry that I have to say to you, in that case, please don't come to me again. On the other hand, if you're willing to pay me £200, which is still only half what I ought to be paid, then that is on the borderline of acceptability. And then if you have problems in the future, I would look after them.
Okay, I'll be expecting you tomorrow or whenever you want to come.
Okay. Now, you're in tonight till what time? Till 9?
I've told you I'm going out by 8 o'clock.
By 8 o'clock. Okay. And when are you in tomorrow? When can I telephone you?
If you have the time in the day.
Any time in the day?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Okay. I'll telephone you and let you know when I'm bringing. And will you have the money definitely ready?
That is not a problem.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thank you. back at the moment. I've been so busy.
That's very kind. You were so helpful to me last year when I was put through the mangle by that terrible neighbour of mine in the court. I don't know if you're aware of it, but the whole process has now been restarted and is going to go through all over again.
Yes, I'm aware.
You are aware. The thing is that I've written to them on... Well, on the recommendation of my Mackenzie friend, Councillor Ewan Larkham, who helped me last time and who will help me again this time, I wrote twice in succession to the council, asking them to give me particulars of their witnesses and details of their evidence, which I understand I'm entitled to do. On both occasions, I received written confirmation of refusal to give any information whatever. Now, last time, looking through the correspondence, I see that they wrote to me, this was last year, saying that having received an instruction from you, the court, to give me the information, herewith is the information, and they gave me the names and so on and so forth. Is there anything you can do to the same sort of thing again?
Gone before the court yet? That maybe that's what this first hearing is about, because it's all brand new proceedings.
I see.
So we'll have to go before the court next Wednesday, and that will be when the request, because that's when everything will actually be discussed before the court.
Oh, I see. So they're not obliged to give the information before the first hearing, is that right?
Well, I think at this stage, no one really knows what's going to happen at the first hearing. So I think that's why it'll be set down, certain things will have to be done, because the other proceedings are closed. These are new proceedings.
Yes.
So it'll be whatever is laid down at the next hearing on the 28th.
The other thing I would like to say, which seems to be enormously important, is that it seems quite contrary to the great principles of British justice and fairness, that once a thing has been decided in my favour, as it was with the kind help of my friends last year, that the whole thing should be reopened and done again. Is this normal? Is it permissible?
Yes, it is.
It is. Is this some new change in the law?
No, not that I'm aware of. I think you can still apply. I don't know the full details, because I'm not a legal advisor, but they would have looked at it before allowing the council to allow, you know, for the appeal to go ahead. But yes, they can, a noise abatement.
Oh, I see. Well, now, does that mean, therefore, that, bearing in mind that the council have unlimited funds of your and my taxpayers' money to squander, does it mean that they can do 20, 30, 40 times this thing over and over again?
That I can't answer. I don't know what the limitation is. I really don't.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea whether there is a limitation on it.
You see, the last thing stressed me to such an extent that I was told that after the court hearing, I looked 10 years older than before. The stress on me, which went on for some years before it finally ended with that case in May last year, was absolutely tremendous. I would dearly love some kind of mechanism, if it exists, to stop the council in their tracks and to be able to live in peace. Is there anything I can do about it?
We can't advise you on that, I'm afraid.
No.
Because we're hearing the case.
Yes, yes.
So we can't actually advise anything along those lines.
No, no. And I can't afford a solicitor, so...
Independent advice.
I'm sorry?
You'd have to get independent advice on that.
Yes.
I can't actually supply you with...
I see. Well, I can't afford a solicitor, so I'm still doing the best I can.
What I would suggest, that's a question. I see no reason why you can't ask that in court next Wednesday.
Well, I should bring it up in court.
I see no reason why you can't ask it, because, I mean, it's a matter of, you know, that I see no reason why it can't be answered.
Yes. Well, that's a very good idea. I'll certainly do that. Thank you very much. Now, let me think, is there anything else? No, I was rather hoping you might be able to order them to tell me that information, but evidently we have to wait.
They're not before the court yet. They're not under any court orders.
No, I see.
The proceedings come up before us. At the moment, the case, if you like, is just in the pipeline.
Yes.
It's not before a bench. The details haven't been laid out. It's only when the details are laid out will the bench actually give an instruction on the way forward.
I see.
Until it actually comes up before us, they won't, you know, the council are within their rights to say, no, we're not giving anything we've not been ordered to, because the glass case is completed, that's closed. This is new proceedings. So any orders have to be given out from the new proceedings.
Yes, yes, I see. Now let me think, there was something else I wanted to ask you, and what on earth was it? Oh, dear. It looks as though... You see, I'm quite convinced that this council, together with my ghastly neighbour, they're determined to destroy me, literally to kill me, because the indirect consequences of their... if they were to win this case, would be that I would be unable to continue living in this house without my dogs. It's quite impossible, because of the curious and extraordinary circumstances that prevail here. I have been targeted and harassed throughout the 48 years that I live here, and it goes on, and most recently there was a death threat by telephone involving someone threatening to shoot me, to burn my house down, to burn down the caravan I have in my grounds, and no less than 8 times in the course of the call I was addressed as "you dirty German bastard." I'm half Hanoverian German, you see. So the thing appears to be getting worse rather than better. Therefore, if the dogs go, I go too. And if I go, I indirectly get killed by it, because there's a legal arrangement for the house I live in. It's an ancient cottage under a semi-charitable arrangement made many years ago, whereby I may live in it. Everything is prepaid until my death, provided I continue to live in it. But if I leave it, which I would be forced to do if my dogs are taken from me, I lose all hold on this home, I become homeless, and I fall as a burden on the local authority for housing. And I would presumably then be put into one of these old ghastly homes for the gaga, and I could only stand that a matter of 2 or 3 days, I think, and I would just die. So they're obviously hell-bent to destroy me at all costs, by whatever means. And they have unlimited means, and I have very, very little money. Anyway, I mustn't bother you with all that, but that is the situation. So it's desperately important to me that I win this case.
I think you have to sort of, you know, you're going to be there Wednesdays to sort of outline it.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Given your opportunity, you know, for the bench to hear your side of the case. It's nothing sort of, you know, I can't prejudge what will happen.
No.
That's something that needs to be, you know, to see what happens on the 28th. You know, obviously you'll be there. Is your Mackenzie friend coming with you?
He's coming. Oh, indeed he is. He's bringing me in his car. One final question. Someone told me some weeks ago that at this preliminary hearing there is no possibility that the matter will be terminated. It is just a preliminary hearing. Is that right?
I don't know, because I don't know what's going to be said at the hearing.
Ah, is there any possibility, do you think, that the matter might be totally terminated and completed? And
I don't know, because I don't know what's going to be said, Captain said, and I've no way of knowing that in advance.
So then one has to say that there is a possibility of that.
Every case has a possibility it won't proceed, but no idea. Can't tell you that, because I don't know what the presentation is going to be from the council.
Oh, I see. Yes.
No idea at all, I'm afraid. You know, the summons is in place, and now it goes before the bench, and then the bench make their decision from whatever is said to them on the day.
Yes. So it could be that there's not going to be a further hearing.
Well, I don't know until the 28th has to go ahead to know what's going to happen with the case.
Yes, yes, I see. Well, that alters the whole thing, rather. Well, thank you very much. You are very helpful. And I can only hope and pray for the best result.
Okay, well, so, but you do need to be there on the 28th.
Oh, I shall make a point of being there. Absolutely, yes. Vital, I can see that.
I mean, if it goes to sort of thing like you know, trial or anything like that for evidence, I mean, that won't be heard on the 28th. That'll be need to be fixed for another hearing.
Oh, you won't go to a trial?
No. I said if it goes to a trial, that date will be fixed as another hearing date. There's no way that they would hear all the evidence on Wednesday.
Ah.
It is just a preliminary hearing.
Oh, it is just a preliminary hearing?
Yes.
Yes, I see. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay.
Bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
shops and second-hand charity shops and living off the things they have there. Well, I wouldn't do that for a minute. I'd say, for goodness sake, waste not, want not, let's get on with it.
Yes.
But not everybody takes that pragmatic view. Now, I must go. There's somebody here. Yes, I'll see you later.
Yes, bye.
Bye-bye.
Who's calling for the dental practice in Langley?
I'm sorry, could I have your name again?
Yep, my name is Miss Sid, and I'm calling from the dental practice in Langley.
Oh, yes.
Hi.
Yes, indeed. You are you the new dentist there?
I am.
I see. And you've taken over from Mrs. Richardson.
That's right.
I must tell you, I'm deeply sad that she has left, because I found her a quite extraordinarily good, able, and also very gentle dentist. Gentleness is important to me,
absolutely.
And she did it very well. I had no idea she was going to retire, which she suddenly did.
Yeah. Well, I can assure you that I'll try my best to live up to Mrs. Ash's standards. Now, it was just about your appointment that you have, right, on the 20th.
I would rather like, if I may, just to come and meet you briefly, if only 2 or 3 minutes, and then to decide whether I want to come to you or whether I want to go elsewhere or what I'm going to do.
Unfortunately, what I was calling to inform you was that because we just have 15-minute appointment slots, we need to book you in for 15 minutes, and it would involve a fee either for a consultation or for an examination.
Well, you see, perhaps I'm being very old-fashioned or something, I don't know. But I can only say that by the standards that I was brought up to, and I'm now 76, that attitude, to me, is quite unacceptable. I would say that anyone who is not willing to give a brief interview to a potential client without making a charge is a person or an organisation that, with due respect, I would prefer not to have dealings with. Now, I'm very sorry to have to say this, because I'd had hoped to continue with your practice. But if that is the position, I'm very sorry. I'm not prepared to pay for something of that kind, and I think it's quite wrong. However, I don't say it's right, normal or not normal, but I would say, to me, it's completely wrong. Even if the entire dental profession does what you are now doing, I would still say it is wrong, and it's very wrong. So thank you very much for telephoning. Under the circumstances, I'm afraid I decline.
Oh, okay, so you don't wish to book in for an examination?
Well, I do not intend to pay merely for meeting you and deciding whether I want to come to you in the future or not. I think that's completely unreasonable. I mean, I will make further inquiries, and it may turn out that I am wrong and you are right. But as I now see it, based on normal everyday principles of dealings with other people, it seems to me wrong.
Right, well, I mean, it was just because, as I say, because we book in 15-minute slots, and it just means that, you know, obviously that's 15 minutes of our time, and that's why it would normally involve, you know, either a consultation fee or examination fee. So, I mean, we're quite happy to book you in, even if you don't want to have your examination done, but unfortunately there would normally be a fee for that.
You see, this is the stumbling block. I'm not prepared to pay that fee. And I think, as I've already said, that under the circumstances, this is a wrong approach. It's perhaps just part and parcel of the many wrong things that go on around us in the modern world. There are many things in the world today which are not, in my view, as they should be and as they formerly were. Now, perhaps I'm wrong, but that is my old-fashioned view, and I'm sticking to it. So if I have to pay merely to come and meet you and not have any treatment of any kind and no examination and nothing, then I'm terribly sorry, you will lose my business and I go elsewhere.
Well, I mean, but you see, I mean, we can do an examination, but you said that you don't wish to book in for an examination.
No, I'm not, at the moment, touch wood, and thank God, my teeth are fine.
Mm-hmm.
All I want to do is to meet the successor of my previous dentist,
okay,
to see whether I'm happy to go to him or her and continue with that practice.
Okay.
If I am, well and good, then when I next need something, I shall then make an appointment and come and have whatever's done and pay for it.
Okay.
If I decide I don't want it, well, then I'll go somewhere else.
Well, would you like me to speak to the principal dentist in the practice?
And who is that?
That would be Mr. Pate.
Yes, I see.
And if I get back to you on that?
Yes, do, by all means.
Okay.
Please explain to him very frankly and openly what I've said to you.
I will.
I don't mean to be unpleasant. I merely want to stick to what, to me, are correct principles.
Okay.
And, I mean, if the answer is no, then it's quite clear that your practice sets no value on me as a patient, and that is another pointer, another signpost to going elsewhere.
Well, I mean, I'll certainly get back to you, and I will speak to the other dentist about that.
Very good.
Okay, then.
Tell me, where do you come from?
Glasgow.
Oh, I see. No, I wondered, because I'm a healthy mongrel. I'm German, French, English. I was told you were Arabian.
No, I'm not Arabian. I'm from Glasgow. I'm Scottish.
Well, how on earth was that? So, Asia was the word I used, Asiatic, I think. And this was told to me by somebody in your reception, I think, about a month or 6 weeks ago.
Right.
How very odd.
You can tell by my accent I'm from Glasgow.
You certainly sound Scottish.
Yeah.
The Scottish are normally sound people to deal with.
Yeah, right.
But, of course, I have to tell you, frankly, the Scots do have a reputation for meanness, which I have not found borne out.
Yeah.
But could it be that what you've just explained to me fits in with that reputation?
No, not at all.
No. Is it? Well, anyway, I leave it to you. You must decide. If you want my further practice, the possibility of my further clientele, then let me know. And if not, I shall make another arrangement.
I'll certainly get back to you on that.
Thank you. It would be nice to be able to continue with you if it's practical.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Testing 1, 2, 3. That's more like it. This is a tape-recorded message sent from Maurice Seddon to Priscilla Lorimer, née Packard, on the What is the date? Let me see. The 12th, it appears to be, yes. The 12th of January, 1988. The time being about 10 minutes to 11 in the morning. Good morning, Priscilla, or good day, Priscilla, depending what time of day you receive this. First of all, may I thank you for your very kind concern in my problems, which you have expressed through Paul, who communicated these to me recently. May I then go on to wish you and yours a very happy, prosperous, but above all things, healthy New Year. Rather belatedly, I'm afraid. As you will see, well, as you will already have heard from Paul, I have, in effect, fallen under the claws of the ravening wolves who have been begotten by Richard Vickers and his very much younger Swiss wife, Verena. I don't want to trouble you with all the details. Suffice it simply to say that at the time when Richard Vickers first approached me on the subject of offering assistance in the matter of this house, the previous owner had, well, thought that she had to sell it in connection with probate of her late husband. This was an elderly lady who was very wealthy. She was the widow of a banker. She was a very old friend of our family, and my sister Cecilia had been at finishing school with her at the finishing school of Countess Gräfin Anna Mongela in Munich in 1933. This was Ursula Kull, who later became Ursula Lady Bellew, wife of the Garter King at Arms of that time. Anyhow, their mama, Mrs. Ursula Kull, felt she ought to sell this house in connection with probate of her late husband. And she was grateful to me for various things that I had done for her. I won't bother you with all the detail. I did a number of things which helped her. And she was grateful, and she showed her gratitude in the practical form, in that she offered to sell specifically the house to me personally, and for my personal benefit and for no one else, at a figure of £6,000, which was actually £1,000 less than she'd given for it a few years earlier. Now, conditional on this sale price was the clear understanding that the benefit of the sale at the reduced price was to go to my benefit and to no one else. Now, I'm very unbusinesslike, as you know. I always say I'm a boffin, I'm the world's worst businessman. I don't really understand business, nor does business interest me, nor have I ever been interested in making a lot of money. I neither have the aptitude for riches, nor do I wish to have riches, because my experience tells me that those who are rich, in every case in which I have experience, it is not for nothing that we have the German proverb, es hängt ein Fluch auf dem Gelde, there hangeth a curse upon money. And every time I've come in contact with rich people, I've always found that the law of compensation is such that they're beset with the most hideous problems of health or morality or marriage disintegration or other problems of that sort. I would far rather have my riches, if you like, in heaven than have them in the financial form. Anyway, now I, not having the money to buy the house, mentioned one day over the telephone to Mildred Vickers, whom, if you remember, I was introduced to through your dear mamma as a relative of hers, the fact that I had this problem and I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do about it. The problem being that Mrs. Ursula Kull wanted to sell the house to me for £6,000 and I only had about one and a half. And I knew nothing about banks and mortgages and all that kind of thing, which, of course, I should have known about with hindsight. I didn't realize what one could do. And she said, oh, dear, we must see whether we can't help. And I do genuinely believe, Priscilla, that at that juncture, Mildred Vickers did intend to help genuinely and in a kind and helpful way. I see no reason to think otherwise. She must have mentioned it to Richard. And shortly after that, I had a letter from Richard. However, already then, an element of misunderstanding, I suppose genuine misunderstanding, I don't know, some kind of misunderstanding must have crept in. Because he wrote me a letter, which I still have, in which he said, we'd be so sorry to see you being put out of business and having nowhere to go. Perhaps we can help you with a mortgage. However, he then said, on another property. property. Now, never from my end had there ever been any mention of any other property, so quite where that crept in, I don't know. It must have been a misunderstanding. I suppose he thought that it wasn't going to be possible to continue with this property. Anyway, be this as it may, he at a later stage came to see me, and the whole thing, I having been introduced to him through your mamma, I thought, A, I'm dealing with a friend, B, I'm dealing with an English gentleman, and you see, perhaps because I'm half German and we tend to be rather extreme in these things, I'd always been, we take the thing literally, I had always been brought up to this belief that the English gentleman's word was his bond. So when Richard and I entered into what seemed to me an absolutely crystally clear verbal arrangement, it seemed to me that this was binding, and that A, there was no need for any written confirmation of it, and B, I tended to think that if one was to request such a thing, it could indeed offend him, because I didn't think that a person of his calibre, that one needed to doubt for an instant the veracity and the genuineness of whatever he might agree to. Anyhow, he came here, he looked at the house, I told him in the clearest possible terms and showed him how extremely dilapidated and decrepit it was. It is a former dower house associated with the old moated mansion of Ditton Park, half a mile away, dating from the times when the Montagues and the Bukaloos had their manorial seat at Datchet at Ditton Park. Anyway, that's a long time in the past, but it's an old, old building. Part of it is over 230 years old. Part of it is over 130 years old. This, according to the information I was given when I first moved into the house. I showed him its problems, which were numerous, namely, that there was not, there is not, and there never has been, a damp course. Hence, humidity rises by capillary attraction in the walls. Furthermore, the house is not level. The whole thing is sloping, it's tilting, because the foundations keep moving about underneath it. With the result, the gutters run the wrong way and the water runs off the wrong ends. The floors are inclined at substantial angles, so that wheeled furniture or television cabinets will roll of their own volition from one side of a room to another. I showed him the fact that the doors were not 90 degrees. They've all had either been sawn off or been chopped or altered or have had triangular pieces added on to them. And this is not a constant situation. It is a constantly varying situation. Thus it is that sometimes the top of one door will touch the top of a door frame. 3 weeks later, it will be the bottom of the same door which is striking the floor, thus indicating that the house isn't moving in one sense. It's moving in alternate senses. All this I made to him very clearly, and he entered into the verbal arrangement with me that he would provide the money by taking it out of his building society, the Abbey National to be exact. He would provide the £6,000 to buy the house, and I would be able in dribs and drabs, according to my very limited means over many, many years, little by little to buy the house from him. And furthermore, we agreed that as the whole thing was very dilapidated and decrepit, there would be no question of the house being maintained to the standards that a normal house would be maintained. On the contrary, such maintenance as was done would be done by me at my discretion on a DIY improvisation basis, using my technical ingenuity to combat the problems as well as I could in the cheapest possible way. And this work would be limited to the most essential part, namely to keep the water out of the roof so that the main structure at least didn't get wet from above, even if it continued to get wet from below. And as the whole thing was unsound and was moving about, and as the whole building was only required to last for as long as I was alive, and for no longer, because thereafter it would be demolished and deemed to be useless by anybody else, there was no point in spending money on a bigger scale than this. Now, this was all perfectly clearly agreed and understood, and it was also understood that I would as I've said, the minimal maintenance on the roof. Now, he then went away. Oh, by the way, he went up onto the roof and had a look at that, because that is a source of constant problems here, in that the whole structure keeps moving, the roof keeps cracking. And particularly, I refer to the part known as the gully, which is the division between the so-called old part and the new part, that is the over 230-year-old and the over 130-year-old bit. And he looked at that, and I showed him how I was equipped with pitch and with bitumen and with a very large propane flame apparatus, a kind of propane cooking machine, and all sorts of things like textiles of various kinds and glass wool fibers for inserting into holes, and how I was constantly engaged, even to the point that I showed him that there was a ladder semi-permanently attached then, as now, as always in the interim period, to the side of the house, to enable one at constantly to go up and at frequent intervals to patch up the roof, because the thing keeps moving. You cannot establish a lasting repair. You get a repair which lasts for as long as the juxtaposition of certain parts of the house remains in a certain relative position. But as soon as this juxtaposition alters due to the movement of the foundations, cracks appear, and one has to go up there again, and again, and again, and again, and again. It's a never-ending operation. So it may be said, really, that the house by modern standards is not habitable and has no value as a house. Furthermore, let me point out to you that before Richard Vickers ever appeared on the scene, the surveyor appeared on behalf of the previous owner, looked at it all, and said to me, as he said also to Mrs. Cull, this house as a house has no value. The value here is only that of the land. Anyway, be this all the same day.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.